scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get to it. It is a Friday, January 31st. Flames Talk's underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And boy, has it been an interesting last 24 hours or so. And Thursday was all about figuring out and reacting to an immediate reaction to a huge trade between the Flames and the Philadelphia Flyers. And the next day on this Friday is all about continuing to do so and maybe start to put the pieces together. And to help us do that right now, wasn't able to join us earlier this week. So very happy that on this Friday we can kick off this hour by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. First of all, Mr. Saravalli, it's great to hear that you're feeling better. Second of all, thank you for being our kind of our conduit to how things were shaking down on Thursday night as Andrei Kuzmenko's late scratch was the first clue to what was going to turn into a significant trade between the Flames and Flyers. Obviously, Joel Farabee, Morgan Frost coming back the other way. Kuzmenko, Jacob Pelche, a couple of picks going to Philadelphia. How did it all kind of come together from your sleuthing? Take us through how Thursday went for you.
Well, it just kind of, at every turn, it was like you added another little log to the fire. And it was like, hey, this is a Kuzmenko deal. And then it was a, hey, Morgan Frost is involved and a draft pick. And then all of a sudden it was Pelletier. And then I was going, okay, there's obviously something else to this. And that's when we were able to nail down the Joel Farabee part of it. So you started to kind of break your calculator out, do a little math on the salaries being exchanged. And I think in the end, what you end up with in a deal for the Calgary Flames is the perfect amount of risk. This is a team that, as you know, has really struggled to score. And they add two very creative, talented middle six forwards that perfectly fit this team from an age scheme perspective. I mean, Jacob Pelletier for the last little while here has been looked at as a younger guy in this Flames organization. And Joel Farabee has hundreds of games of NHL experience, closing in on 400 games, and they're the same age. So it kind of gives you some perspective on what the Flames are getting. And I've watched these two players very closely here living in Philly. The Flames are getting players that I think are just scratching the surface. I'm not saying they're going to necessarily explode, but they have been beaten down and we're in a desperate need for a change of scenery. And I think they're going to get that and plenty of opportunity.
Frank, would this be another one of those market inefficiencies that the Flames took advantage of? Is this another situation where Craig Conroy identified a couple players that maybe can be put in a better spot and flourish a little bit more as members of the Flames?
I think so. I think every team in the league keeps a list of players that are in the change of scenery category. Some are obvious, some less so. Like, everyone could see the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation unfolding last year in LA, or pick a guy that is Trevor Zegras would be on one now, or John Gibson, or go through every team. Like, it's not that hard to figure out. And these two guys, Frost and Farabee, have been in John Tortorella's doghouse for a while. There was no end in sight to that. It didn't matter how much these guys competed, how hard they worked, what kind of point or production streak they were on. I firmly believe that they were never going to be in the good books. And I think that ultimately is the sign of a coach that is dogmatic in how he thinks about the game. Look, not every player is perfect, but at a certain point, players are what they are, and you either have to learn and accept and appreciate all the good things that they bring to the table and forget about the things that drive you crazy, or it's never going to work. It's going to be constantly square peg and round hole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I felt about Farabee and Frost in Philly. Right now on the low end, the Flames are adding 45 goals and 90 points to their lineup. If you said to me 1 year from now that Morgan Frost is a 65 to 70 point center in the NHL, I wouldn't be surprised in the least. I think he's got the goods. I think Farabee, same thing, a worthy bet on the wing. I think also the fact that these two guys are so close and are coming to Calgary together will help in their transition. And I think you're just going to see two players that are freed up, that it's been a slog. And both of those guys, I think, were really proud and excited to be Flyers. And I'm sure part of this hurts, but I can tell you that knowing their situation in Philly, they're really looking forward to something different.
How significant is the timing, Frank? How significant is it that the Flames kind of did this a little more than a month out from the trade deadline, giving both guys, who I think are probably still a little stunned by the whole situation, giving them that extra month to get acclimated and to kind of get comfortable with a new team?
I don't put a ton of significance in the timing, except maybe from a Flyers perspective, that given all those things that I just said, that there probably wasn't a path for those guys to continue on long-term. At some point, they were going to have to rip the Band-Aid off, whether it was before this deadline, whether it was in the summer, whatever it might be. I just didn't, especially with John Tortorella returning, I didn't see a path for them to continue on long-term. So I'm sure the freedom and flexibility from their perspective of now having moved off of the Farabee contract, which was the one that really stood out, they've got now $5+ million in cap space next year and beyond moving forward. So that is pretty big for them. But from a Flames perspective, I think what this was for Craig Conroy was a masterclass in patience. He mentioned that these conversations have been ongoing. And when I reported back in, late September, early October, the season's just getting started, and I said the Flames are on the hunt for a center that fits their age scheme. Morgan Frost was one of the guys on my list that I had the Flames checking in on. And, they've been following this pretty diligently, and just some stick-to-itiveness from Craig Conroy and his staff to say, hey, this is a guy that fits. May not be a perfect fit because, again, in a perfect, perfect world, this guy is 22 years old and a right shot center and right. and. But here's the thing. You're not getting teams to give up on guys that are 22 and have 50 points and are right shot centers. That's going to take until they're 24 or 25 for that conversation to expand into a place where teams are willing to do it. So it did require some time and patience, but I think they're better off for it. And I think the Flames are instantly better today. And when you think about what they gave up, it's probably pretty likely that over the long haul, both Pelletier and Kuzmenko were not going to be in their plans. Like they almost lost Pelletier on waivers, or could have lost him. And Kuzmenko, with that contract, that was not an asset that had value. Mm-hmm. So to turn that into and adding in a second round pick to some instant offense for this team, I view it as, like I said, the perfect amount of risk. I view it as very little risk for the Flames.
Frank Saravalli's with us, Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. On the Flyers side of things, how much, I guess, when it comes to Danny Briere and what they're trying to do, you talked about the cap space, but in terms of the assets they're bringing back from a Pelche to a Kuzmenko or the two picks, what's your read on what they coveted most? What's your read on what the Flyers really wanted and are super happy to be bringing back?
Cap space and a second-round pick. They got the better of the second-round picks that the Flames held. And they made a couple shots in the dark. Peltier, as mentioned, younger guy, but not that young. Like at 24, you know, that's when prospects turn into suspects. And he certainly had looked a lot better over the second half of this first half of the year since the call up. Looked a lot more like an everyday NHLer. But still has a ways to go in terms of proving it. And with his frame and size, I wonder if Danny Briere especially would appreciate someone needing a little extra opportunity, given his own stature. And with Kuzmenko, it's two parts. It's one, can he provide some comfortability to someone like Matvei Michkov because they played together in Russia? Is he someone that can help Michkov at a time when he's beginning to flail again? And you see the fireworks even last night during the game on the bench with John Tortorella. He's benched again. It feels like it's kind of one thing after the other for a winger who is uber talented, that is not a play driver and has trouble skating. So important inflection point, I think, for Michkov, but also at the same time, can Michkov, with the talent that he has, maybe unlock Kuzmenko again? You guys saw it in the second half of last year, you know, a calendar year ago, once Kuzmenko came in. There's a reason why this guy was one goal away from a 40-goal, 75-point campaign as a rookie. There's something there. Who and how are they going to unlock it again? I just don't think it was happening in Calgary. So two hopes and prayers and a decent second-round pick and some cap space.
Are the Flames done bettering this group? What more could Craig Conroy have his eye on here?
I don't think they're done bettering this group. I would think that they're going to be in the market to maybe make another trade like this one, meaning boost, but not for any short-term gain. Mm-hmm. There was no part of this deal that was designed, and this is kind of exactly what I, as I'd been talking every week about what the Flames could get up to, this was exactly the type of deal that I had envisioned.
Yep.
That helps this team now, but doesn't cut off anything in the future and, you know, doesn't limit this team in any way. And I think that was hard for fans to conceptualize or process, but this trade wasn't made to try and put the Flames over the top and become a playoff team. If that's an ancillary bonus, if that happens in addition to, great. But the idea was to continue to build this team brick by brick and make them more competitive, make them a better scoring team. And these are guys that can fit for the next 3 to 5 years. So I think people initially heard, hey, the Flames might be adding, and they start to get freaked out because they think, hey, this is, what kind of short-term gains are we looking for here, and what's going to be the long-haul damage? And I think they were able to manage that really appropriately. So I could see another deal in that same vein, something that can help for the future. I could also see a really small lowercase addition that is on the shorter term variety. If you could prop up this third pair defense, if you could potentially add another, you know, low key bottom six player that might be able to provide a little scoring punch for nothing. That's sort of the world that I envision Craig Conroy and the Flames in moving forward.
Yeah. And if they could find themselves similar player like kind of in that same age range, same situation, who might just be a left shot defenseman that they could permanently pair with Mackenzie Weegar. I feel like that's an area that could really, really help them. And that's kind of now what I'm looking at. Do they have I know that top four defensemen aren't necessarily readily available as you move towards the deadline, but is there somebody like that the Flames could swing a very similar like move with? I'm curious if Craig Conroy is able to do that, whether it is before the trade deadline or sometime before next season.
Yeah, I mean, I really like someone like Mike Matheson in Montreal. I think that would be a great fit. I think there's like some Noah Hanifin-like qualities to Matheson that would really be beneficial, but it's going to cost you. Like, if you're going to get and he's probably even a bit on the older end of the age range or scheme,
right,
that the Flames would be interested in. But that type of player, the thing is, you're going to have to convince Montreal to give him up, because they're thinking about things not all that differently than the Flames are, that they want to not open themselves up to having to put young players into the lineup and doing things out of turn and out of order. That's one. And look, I'm real curious to see what the rest of the market shapes up like. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that there's teams calling the Buffalo Sabres about Owen Power or about some of these other guys that are in the mix. To shake things up. I just don't know what, going back to the age-old part of this conversation that we've had all year, if, for instance, someone like Owen Power is available, which I would have good reason to believe that he is, if that's the case, what could the Flames possibly offer to entice a team like the Buffalo Sabres? Mm-hmm. That's the harder part of the equation that I struggle with.
Yep. Yeah, and that is very, very, very fair.
Same thing with Dylan Cousins.
Yep.
Dylan Cousins would have been the ideal fit. I'm 100% certain that the Calgary Flames have called and asked the Buffalo Sabres about Dylan Cousins. I just don't think they have the goods.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. I think that's probably enough for today, my friend. I appreciate the time. Yeah, I think so. Because we can reconvene on the cap news on Tuesday. That'll still be relevant when we chat again on Tuesday. But everybody wants to talk about this Flames Flyers trade in this market. So we'll do some other stuff when we get back to regular schedule next week. But thanks for doing this today. Hey.
Yeah, sounds good. Always good to connect with you, Pat, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, great work on Thursday. We appreciated it out here. Thanks, Frank. He is the one and only Frank Saravalli. He joins us every Tuesday on Flames Talk. This week, I had to switch it up a little bit, so joining us on Friday, and the timing works pretty well. And he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. And it's the day after one of the craziest days we've been a part of in quite some time. It was about 13 years ago, a little more than 13 years ago, the last time you and I would have gone through an in-game trade.
Yeah.
You know who they were playing that night when Mike Camilleri got brought back to the Flames?
I don't know. I just know Rene Bourque was scratched in that game.
The Anaheim Ducks.
I probably should have put that together, hey?
Yeah, and I remember because I watched a little more of this game than I did of that game 13 years ago. I think it was January 12, 2012. When the Rene Bourque, Mike Camilleri trade got consummated, I didn't watch a lick of that game. Like, all I remember is it was a 1-0 win, and I remember Blair Jones, not even David Jones, but Blair Jones scored the overtime winner in a 1-0 win over Anaheim. That was.
I don't know how you do this. I don't know how you dip into your back pocket and pull out a Blair Jones overtime winner. Well, I don't.
That might have been Blair Jones' only overtime winner as a member of the Flames.
Apologies, Blair. He doesn't mean it. He hasn't slept in 2 days, Blair. Leave him alone.
How do we feel about this now that we've had a little bit of time to reflect on it? And by that, I mean the two new players, Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee, coming to the Flames. Jacob Pelche, Andre Kuzmenko, a second-round pick this year, and a seventh-round pick I believe in
29,
25 years from now.
As far Craig away Conroy, as you can legally trade a pick, Craig that's
Conroy,
when it's available.
Craig Conroy told us that when he joined us on Flames Talk postgame on Thursday night that they needed just something to get them over the hump to make this trade. So they came up with the 2028 seventh round pick. That's what got the Flyers over the hump, apparently.
The saltiest of sweeteners right there. The late round pick in the draft furthest away that you're allowed to make a deal on in terms of those draft assets. Incredible. I don't know. I feel the same as I did yesterday, to be perfectly honest with you. And when you phrased that question, I saw it on the sheet. I'm going, do I feel better? Do I feel worse? Or do I feel the same? And to be honest, I feel the same. The Calgary Flames just added two top nine forwards to their core. That one's on pace for 40 points for a third straight year. And you've got a guy and the other guy in Joel Farabee who scored 20 twice and would have scored 20 another instance. He had 17 goals in 21-22, but only played 63 games that year. That's a 22 goal pace. So yeah, there's a reason, and we maybe won't get into that, why they were available from Philly. And we just heard from Frank as to, you know, his intuition and his research into why they were available. But suddenly the Calgary Flames are that much deeper at forward. They're that much deeper down the middle. They have that many more options when it comes to deploying their lineups. And they did so with players that fit exactly what Craig Conroy's vision is in terms of the age range. We're talking about a 24-year-old player, a 25-year-old player. That is absolutely right smack dab in the middle of the wheelhouse of prerequisites that Conroy wants in a player when they're looking at acquiring him. So, and when you look at the acquisition cost, it costs you a guy that you, unfortunately, but were willing to lose for free on waivers at the beginning of the year. Another player that I'm not sure, I mean, from the outside looking in, had any trade value with how his season was going. And then perhaps maybe the piece, and this is no disrespect to Peltier Kuzmenko, but the piece that might hurt the most is the second round pick this year. So when you're able to, and to be fair, the likelihood of a second round pick making the NHL and playing 100 games is somewhere around 30%. So you're giving up a dart throw to get two bona fide NHLers now that fit your culture, your age range, positions of need. And again, it doesn't cost you all that much.
So when, and we'll try to get some texts in if there's time this hour, any time that I've been asked on a post-game show or when we're reading texts about should the Flames go and bolster the lineup, should they go and you know, add and should they go and help the team right now, I always say, well, no, not if it's going to be only for this season. The only time that I was like, yes, go do that is if we're talking about a trade that was made like Thursday's trade. In that, it had to be a deal that impacted the future as much, if not more, than the present. And that's what this trade on Thursday was. And you know, Craig Conroy has been adamant and continues to be adamant that they're not going to divert from this plan they have. And by making the trade Thursday night with Philadelphia, it's just another example of how they're not diverting from the plan and still trying to make the team better in the big picture. And I don't know if Morgan Frost is going to turn into a bona fide 1B number two center, but he might. And there's plenty of reason to think that he will. And I don't know if Joel Farabee is going to get back to being a 50-point winger or if there's more to it. Maybe there's 60 or 65 points in a guy like Joel Farabee. I don't know those things. However, they're very, very good bets to make for guys that are 24 and 25, soon to be 25 and 26, guys that fit your age range. They fill not just a need right now, specifically Frost as a natural center, but they also fill an organizational need going forward. Yeah, they make you younger. They make you better right now, but they also are two players that you can grow with going forward. They're two players that potentially could grow into even larger pieces of this organization. And to your point, Vix, I mean, Jacob Pelche was on waivers in October. And Andre Kuzmenko, we were just waiting for him to get to the end of the contract. As well as he had been playing, there was no viable trade value.
Well,
there.
And to be fair, he was playing well for five games.
It had been like 5 games, right?
It had been 50 now?
It had been an enigmatic, extremely frustrating season prior to that. So they moved on from two players, one that clearly wasn't a part of the plan, and one that maybe was part of the plan, and they had on waivers earlier this year. And as good as Pelche had played, there's still nothing to suggest that Jacob Pelche is a bona fide impact NHLer. And honestly, I hope that he goes to Philadelphia and proves that he is. But I still see this as a really solid bet for the Flames. And you've got two guys. I'm all about those market inefficiencies, right?
Oh, yeah.
And this feels like one of those market inefficiencies that the Flames took advantage of.
The only one or the only segment of people that are upset at this deal, I would imagine, is Team Tank, where you're adding two players that help the Flames win now. We're supposed to be bottoming out, so on and so forth. But doesn't this deal also make them better 3 years from now, 4 years from now, when you want that window to be opening, even if you were completely tanking? It rewards all the guys in the room right now because there's no doubt, there's no question, there's no argument. The Flames are a better team today than they were 2 days ago. And so you're rewarding everybody in the room. You're adding assets and talent that can help you both now and in the future. And you're doing so by keeping your mantra of we're looking to get younger. We're looking to build a core that is 23, 24, 25 years old now, so that when that window does open, they're hitting that 27, 28, 29-year-old range.
This on the text line. Read a few texts. 960, 960. I don't mind the deal. I don't love giving up the second. I'm probably in the minority, but I actually think the Flames have drafted pretty well for the picks they've had. The problem is they've traded away too many draft picks. This from Wedley says they owed the group. And again, as long as it was going to be owing the group or paying the group back with something that wasn't just focused on this year, that wasn't a pure rental or something like that, I'm all for it. This says the thing that really puts the value of this trade in perspective is when you take it a step back and look at the return Calgary got in the Lindholm deal. I know there's been a lot of talking about that. Jeff in Lethbridge says Conroy's looking like a genius right now. And this from Daryl says, what do we know about the Morgan Frost injury? Doesn't sound like it's anything significant. They're on their way here as we're speaking right now, about 4:30 on a Friday. So it doesn't sound like there's anything significant in that regard when it comes to Morgan Frost's injury. He did leave the game on Thursday, a loss to the Islanders, but he left because of the injury, not the tweaking of whatever it was, not because he was getting pulled out for trade reasons, but it sounds like the Flames are expecting him to be a possibility to play on Saturday against Detroit.
Just quickly, that trade tree that was referred to in that text, Lindholm, Pelche, a 2025 second and a 2028 seventh has turned into Frost, Farabee, Brustevich, Gridin, Luke Misa, Eric Jameson, and Joni Yermo. So that's and keep in mind that was a pending unrestricted free agent, Elias Lindholm.
Yep.
Pretty good piece of work.
With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Frank Saravalli for kicking off this hour. And we're coming at you this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Friday edition of the program rolls on, and it's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Obviously still reacting to Thursday night's trade and the roster facelift the Flames got as a result. And with two new players into the lineup, Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost, and assuming both are good to play on Saturday against Detroit, gents, with what we know about the forward lines, with the two players that have exited the Flames roster, like what's the any bright ideas, any ghost rosters on how you might put things together going forward here?
Well,
Well, I've got some ideas. I'm just not sure how bright they are. But I have kind of fooled around with some different combinations, trying to figure out what makes sense. I guess if I had an opportunity to ask Ryan Huska, and we'll have this chance to talk to him tomorrow, but if I had a chance to talk to him today, I think the first question I would ask him is, do you want to keep Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost together on a line? Because they were playing on a line together with the Flyers. There's obviously familiarity there. There's a friendship there. There's some chemistry there. But just to play devil's advocate, do you want two players from a new team that don't know your system playing on the same line together? Or do you want to split them up and play them with two guys who know what they're supposed to be doing as members of the Flames, know the system a little bit better? I guess that would be my question for Ryan Huska. But for the sake of this exercise, I'm going to keep the two new Flames together. So I've got two different combos. The first one I think is maybe not realistic, but more realistic than the second one. So here we go from left to right. Huberto with Kadri and Coronado. I think Matt Coronado has earned a look on the top line. As much as I love him playing on a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman, I'd like to see him put in a position to score some more goals. He's doing a great job of that, but I think he can do an even better job of that. So Jonathan Huberto, Nazem Kadri, Matt Coronado, Joel Farabee, Morgan Frost, Yegor Sharangovich, Blake Coleman, Michael Backlund, Martin Pospisil, and then Ryan Lomberg and either Clark Bishop or Kevin Rooney and Adam Klapka. Now, my next set of four lines might be a bit of a stretch, but bear with me. Huberto with Kadri and Klapka. I know it was one game, but thinking about what they want on the right side of that top line, we saw that from Klapka last night. Can he keep doing it? Farabee with Frost and Coronado. Coleman with Backlund and Sharangovich as a checking slash shutdown line. And then Lomberg with Bishop or Rooney and Pospisil for a hard to play against energy line, fourth line. So those are the two kind of four line combinations I've come up with. I'm not sure how realistic they are though, guys.
I think I took the lazy approach. I'm not going to lie. Because I've got quickly Huberto, Kadri, Pospisil, Farabee, Frost, Sharangovich, Coleman, Backlund, Coronado, Lomberg, Bishop, Klapka. And my thought process behind this is I kind of want to disrupt as little as possible right off the hop until Farabee and Frost can get acclimated a little bit. And Pospisil, of course, has history with Huberto, Kadri. You're not touching the Backlund line. Fourth line stays the same. The only thing that I'm a little, and this is partially why I call it lazy, is keeping the two former Flyers together. Because this season, Frost played primarily with Michkov and Tippett. They played 157 minutes together, 5-on-5. Farabee played primarily with Couturier and Konechny at 160 minutes, 5-on-5. Frost and Farabee together only have played a total of 30 minutes together this season and a total of 75 minutes together last season per Money Puck. So, yeah, we've heard off the ice, they're really close. On the ice, they haven't really had a body of work to work with, so I don't know what the on-ice chemistry necessarily is like, and I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I'm an aficionado on everything Philadelphia Flyers and Frost game would fit with Farabee or vice versa, or who they might actually naturally fit with on Flames roster. So basically what I did with this little mini assignment was try to keep things as normal as possible for as many players as possible on the Flames. And that just means that Sharangovich gets the first crack, I guess, with the former Flyers.
Yeah, I mean, guys, to do this exercise, I didn't necessarily put all the lines together as much as the main thing is I'd really like to see Farabee come in and play on the Kadri line. That to me is the thing that I'd like to see more than anything else. The book on Farabee is he's skilled, he's creative, and he's very good off the rush. And I think that has the potential of working very, very well with Huberto specifically. And, you know, Pospisil worked with Huberto and Kadri for a bit, but definitely fell off. Pelche before the trade. Pelche worked for a bit, but over the last two or three games had fallen off. And so I was already thinking about, like, do you put a Kuzmenko on that line or do you put to your point, Wilsey, a Coronado on that line. And I just feel now going out and getting Farabee, like there's a ready-made fit on that line. Now, I know that they didn't bring in any more right shots, so it's still a right. In fact, they lost a right shot. They're even more left shot heavy after the trade. So you're going to have to be playing multiple guys on the right wing that have left shots. But I just, I feel like now you've got this player who is adept on the rush, who is creative, has a really good high offensive IQ and hockey sense. That just feels like the perfect fit to put on a line that already didn't have a natural fit. Like, why not put Farabee right there? Because I think we all know where Frost is going to go, and that is one of your three centers. And then you can work around, and you're keeping the Backlund line the same. You can work around what you want to do on that line with Frost and Sharon Govich, and you can put Pospisil there if you want. And there's a third line that you can work with very, very nicely. And then, do what you need to do and who you want, Rooney or Bishop on your fourth line. I really like the idea of putting Farabee on that top line, and I really think there's a potential that could flourish. And maybe it takes some time because there's always chemistry questions and chemistry things that need to be figured out. But that's the main one for me, because I think it's pretty obvious where Frost should be. That's your third center behind or with, even if it's not behind, with Kadri and Backlund. But what about Farabee? And I think there's a lot to like about potentially popping him right onto that top line.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I just don't know enough about him. I don't know how much time he spent playing on the right side. And Aaron, that was some really good information as far as how much time Farabee Frost spent playing together on the same line as members of the Flyers. I just assumed they had spent more time than that, because when I looked at the line combinations for last night's game, I saw Farabee on the left side of Frost. So I probably shouldn't have, but I jumped to the conclusion that they'd probably spent more time playing together on a line than that. But I just think Matt Coronato is still untapped. He's got 13 goals playing on a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman that gets a lot of defensive zone starts, that is always matched up against the other team's top players. What if you put him on a line with your two best offensive players and tried to get him some more favorable matchups and some more offensive zone starts? I just wonder if you could really unleash Matt Coronato. And for a team that struggled to score goals this season, I think that could be important. And yeah, maybe you don't play the two new guys together, whether because they haven't had instant chemistry as members of the Flyers, not that that could change with the Flames. It certainly could. But maybe just because you don't want two new guys playing on the same line and trying to figure out things with one line mate who knows what they're doing, as opposed to two. So maybe you do split them up. But the reason I threw Klapka on the top line in my kind of second group of four lines was because I know what Ryan Husk is looking for from the right winger on the line with Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri. Wants a guy who can create a little bit of chaos, a guy who can skate, get in, do some of the dirty work, bang, crash, go to the net. I think we saw Adam Klapka do all of those things and do them at a really high level, be it for the first time in his NHL career for an entire game. But that was a hell of a hockey game he played last night. So I just wonder if you were to put him beside Kadri and Huberdeau, and then if you had Pospisil in a fourth-line role, if it didn't work, you could just swap those two guys. But I also think there's something to be said for leaving that Backlund-Coleman-Coronado line together, because it's been consistently good. And I guess disrupting the team as little as possible makes some sense as well. But with that said, I think we've all said that the Flames are going to have to score some more goals down the stretch if they're going to get into the playoffs. So do you stick with the status quo, which has worked to a certain extent, or you try some new combinations looking for some more offense? I guess it's a question Ryan Husk is going to try to have to answer.
And Wilsey, I'm not disputing, or I won't fight you on the thought of Coronado on that top line, because it's something I've kicked around as well. So hypothetically you do that, but what if you put Farabee with Backlund and Coleman? We heard Craig Conroy on Thursday night liken Farabee to a Blake Coleman type. I don't know if that's too much of a Coleman type on one line. I'm not certain that that could ever be a thing, to be perfectly honest with you. But we've also seen whoever goes with Backlund and Coleman seems to acclimatize really well to that line. So that would be another combination I would look at tossing out.
And then
go ahead,
sorry.
Pospisil and Sharon Govich, I wouldn't say they're at the top of their games right now. So putting them with those two guys could help get them going as well. Sharon Govich has been better. Pospisil's been a little bit up and down, like literally and figuratively. So I don't know. Just trying to come up with some new combinations here instead of just sticking with the status quo and trying to squeeze two guys in.
And you know what? Like, even when, like, I don't think there's anything, and this is not a knock on Pospisil, but if Pospisil plays, like, if they're all healthy when Connor Zeri's ready to return, and we're talking about Zeri ready for post-Four Nations break, and that means demoting Pospisil to being a regular fourth-line guy, I don't mind that. I don't know if Pospisil has shown this year that he should be in the top nine on a regular basis, but I do think that he's probably slightly better than being an everyday fourth liner. But having that gives you that all of a sudden now you're talking about a deeper lineup and not playing as many guys over their head. And I feel like what bringing in Frost and Farabee does is now you're not playing guys over their head or arguably over their head, because Pelche at times has looked like a top nine guy with the Flames, and at other times hasn't looked like a top nine guy. And at times Kuzmenko has looked like a top nine guy, and at other times Kuzmenko, you don't know if he's playing. And so now with Farabee and Frost, like, these guys have hundreds of games of being middle six, top nine forwards in the National Hockey League. Like, they will fit there. So I don't even know if there's a wrong answer necessarily as to where to put them, just because they're if you wanted to put them on the back, wanted to put one on the Backlund line, sure. If you wanted to put one on the Kadri line, sure. If you wanted to put Frost and Farabee together, sure. Like, there's not really an answer that I'm like, no, that you can't do that, because you just, these guys are going to be slotted properly on this team. And maybe not everybody had been slotted properly. And so I think that really helps. And then all of a sudden, Connor Zeri comes back and everybody remains healthy. Well, now all of a sudden, you've got the opportunity to have somebody who's maybe not clearly a fourth liner, but not clearly a guy that should be in your middle six every day either, like a guy like Pospisil. And maybe he can really start to grow into being an effective fourth line guy. And maybe that helps you have an effective fourth line on a regular basis, which they've been lacking for weeks and months now. So it just feels like, even though it's two roster players in, two roster players out, it just feels like the Flames have more options than they did before.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Jacob Pelche, he was playing all right. I mean, he had two or three really good games playing in the top nine and, you know, earned a promotion onto the top line and looked good for a game or two playing alongside Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri. But I still didn't look at him as a top line guy, a top nine guy, sure. But I also could envision him being a good fourth line energy guy. And I guess that's a testament to him being able to play in some different roles. But yeah, when Connor Zeri comes back, it creates some more good problems for the Flames, right? Because to your point, Pat, if everybody's healthy when that happens, isn't Martin Pospisil the obvious guy to drop out of the top nine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, if Pospisil could wrap his head around being a fourth line guy and playing that role, man, he could be literally one of the best fourth line players in the National Hockey League. And I think give that fourth line an identity. But find a piece of wood to knock on that the Flames can stay relatively healthy for the remainder of the season. It felt like they were for the last two or three years, and that all kind of caught up to them with some season-ending and long-term injuries this season. But, yeah, this trade certainly gives the Flames more depth, and if they can get Zeri back and stay healthy between now and then, yeah, I think this team's even deeper than it's been at any point in time this season, and that will be much more difficult to match up against and to play against.
And I know we'll probably cross that bridge when we get there, and it's a hypothetical until Zeri's back and if he comes back and everybody's healthy. But I only bring this up because Pat and I got into a very heated scrap on Thursday night. But does Zeri come back as a center?
Oh, yeah.
Or does he come back as a winger now? Because with the acquisition of Frost,
winger.
You've got Kadri,
well,
Frost, Backlund.
Back as a winger,
now he
right?
comes back as a winger.
You just knew that was going to happen. You were holding out on me.
I actually just wanted to fight with you on air for, you know, 5 minutes. And even though, you know, maybe I'm being a little dramatic in terms of calling it a fight, but
Because now they have three natural centers. And Zeri, I think it's probably unfair to not call Zeri a natural center because he's played center lots throughout his career, junior, even in the American League. But at the NHL level, he was still acclimating from being a winger to a center. Where Morgan Frost has been a center his entire NHL career for the most part and is a natural center. And, you know, we're talking a lot about it being a right shot, not being a right shot. That Craig Conroy made a great point when he joined us on Flames Talk postgame on Thursday night. He basically said, yeah, you know, we want a right shot was definitely something we were looking for, but there's your wish list. And then there's what's actually realistic, and right shot centers are young right shot centers, not readily available. And if you are in a situation where you can maybe pry one out of another team, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg and then another arm and a leg. So you're in a scenario where the realistic ability to do that wasn't there. But Frost at over 51% in the faceoff dot, it's not like the whole idea of strong side, weak side faceoffs is unique to the Flames. Every team knows what hand guys shoot with. And so Ryan Huska's talked a lot about how opposing teams on defensive zone draws, when they've got the choice, like after an icing or to start a penalty kill, will put Backlund or whoever on the weak side because they know they've got a better chance of winning a faceoff. Well, Morgan Frost is a left shot, has that same thing happen to him, and he's over 51% in the faceoff dot. So there's like no way you can spin it that him coming in all of a sudden gives them a massive, massive boost in an area they've been very weak in, and that's the faceoff dot. So I just I look at it, and I think that there is just infinitely more things to tinker with if you're the Flames, whereas it felt at times over the last number of weeks, and it's funny because we had this conversation on Thursday, but it feels like over the last number of weeks it's been like trying to figure out what's the best imperfect look or what's the best like non-desirable option to complete your lines. It feels like they're a whole lot closer to having more desirable options now.
Well, no doubt about it. And Frost, just his face-off percentage makes him a better option up the middle of the ice than Zeri. And I'm not saying that Zeri won't grow in that area of the game. I'm sure that he will as he gets more experienced and gets a little bit older. But I definitely think that's a better option, if only because he's better in the face-off circle, and that's an area where the Flames have really struggled this season. And again, knock on wood, everybody stays healthy. Zeri comes back after the Four Nations break, and the Flames have to figure out who's playing with who and who's playing on what side and who's playing up the middle, all those good things. On my wish list between now and the trade deadline would actually be a fourth-line centerman, ideally one that shoots right and can help you kill penalties. Because if you can add that guy to play between, let's say, Lomberg and Pospisil, now you got a fourth line that has an identity, has a role, guys that you can use on special teams. And I think the Flames become the type of team that can really roll four lines and make the matchups much more difficult, especially when you've got last change at home.
Guys, why don't we just give Michael Backlund an old Kuzmenko stick and tell him to take the Four Nations break and learn how to shoot the other way?
Or just take faceoffs the other way.
And if you ask me, like, if you're asking what the number one thing is now for me in terms of what the Flames,
I think we're on the same
choir,
page.
They need another, like,
left shot D.
Yeah, they need a left shot D. And I mean, I don't know how realistic it is that they'll be able to pull off a trade similar to Thursday night when it comes to getting a 24-year-old left shot D, like basically getting another Kevin Ball. I don't know how readily available somebody like that really is. But if you can, I think it helps them in a significant way, because that is an area that I do think, again, kind of in a situation that it's a bunch of imperfect options that you've got right now, specifically with Kevin Ball hurt. But even with Kevin Ball hurt, can you find that guy to solidify the second pairing or the other top pairing with Mackenzie Weegar? Can you get somebody who's a clear, with no disrespect to Joel Hanley, what a great campaign he's had and what an important part he's been to help stabilize things on the blue line. But can you find a bona fide kind of top four guy or somebody with top four upside that maybe hasn't realized it yet to play full time with Mackenzie Weegar?
Well, and that's the thing. You're not looking just for a left shot defenseman. You're looking for a top four left shot defenseman. And just about every contender is looking for a top four defenseman to add between now and the deadline. So prices are probably going to be pretty high So you get Kevin Ball back, and then at least you've got some different options, and you've got more depth than you do right now. But I'll tell you, I said this last night, I'll say it again today. I think that everything that happened yesterday between us getting some good news on Connor Zeri being back on the ice in a very limited way in the next week or so, and you know, then the Flames getting a career night from Adam Klapka and almost a hat trick from Matt Coronato after he had three and then had one of those goals taken away, and then a come-from-behind victory over the Ducks that moves him into the second wild card spot of the Western Conference and to within 1 point of third place in the Pacific Division, and then the big trade, which clearly makes the team better now and probably down the road as well. Probably the most exciting day for the Flames franchise going back to that playoff run in 2022, whether it be Game 7 against the Stars or Game 1 against the Oilers. Just a really exciting night inside of Scotiabank Saddledome. It was a lot of fun.
And for now, we will close off the roundtable, and then we'll reconvene, see what everything looks like on Saturday when these two teams, well, not these two teams, when the Flames hit the ice for the first time for morning skate with their new players. So we'll see what those line combos are like. For now, have a great rest of your Friday. We'll see you Saturday morning. Thank you, Wilsey.
Yeah, I can't wait. Have a great weekend, everybody.
That is our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that's the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.